This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show. From Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist, here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon, prepare yourself for an hour with the Commissioner of Dirt, the pastor to plants around the Umpqua Valley, the man who could give you, well, the man who is gotten down in the dirt to give you the information you need.
This is the dirtiest show on radio.
Careful now. I don't need another memo from corporate. He said what on the radio? Mike Winters here again for another week, and it's interesting because...
You make it sound like I wasn't going to show up or something.
Well, no, I just... it's important because more and more people are paying more and more attention to their yard right now.
Oh, yeah, and that's kind of one of the topics of my conversation today. So, anyway, thank you for listening. I hope there's a lot of you out there that want to be educated and be given hints and help on your lawn, garden, your trees, shrubs, vegetables, whatever you might want, patios, what the heck, fire pits. We can do it all, sprinkler systems, etc. So, if you have a question, don't hesitate to call. Well, no matter what I'm speaking about, we'll break that thought and go to yours. And the number is 673-4464. 673-4464. So, anyway, you had a good segue into my... You must have been reading my mind or my notes or something. But at any rate, as long as we're all staying home more, well, some of us are, but a lot of folks are staying home more, and their interests have turned if they have a home and a yard. Well, how do we fix the yard up? Why don't we enjoy the yard? Why don't we make it nicer, greener, shadier, or take out that stupid lawn and put some rocks in instead? I mean, no matter where your slant on how you're going to improve, it's a good time to do it, and there's lots of folks out there doing it. So,
you know, when I was out walking on Monday, I came across a house in Hughcrest. It's probably 10 years old. It's a newer area, and I liked the way it was decorated in front in terms of, but there was no grass, and I kind of peered to the side. I don't think there was a blade of grass on the entire property. Well, I mean, I didn't see the backyard, but I'm just guessing based on the way everything was laid out, but it was different kinds of rock and different plants and everything. I liked it. It wouldn't work for me, but I liked it.
Yeah.
And I like the cooling that just the ambience of grass and all of that.
So, oh, I know.
It looked a little Arizona-ish too much for me.
Arizona-ish. Well, believe it or not, there are clients that call me, especially retired folks that want to travel around and do other things. They want to take out the lawn, they want to put some rocks in, or they want to put some, bark mulch in with some boulders. We transform yards like that, several times a year. Then they want no maintenance. Well, there's no such thing as no maintenance, but there's such thing as lower maintenance, that you're not out there mowing and edging and fertilizing a lawn of, 1,000 square feet or 10,000 square feet and that kind of thing. Usually families with any kids, they like to have a lawn so the kids can go out there and squirrel around on the lawn and do somersaults and play baseball or something.
Well, and because the yard I saw would not really work for kids because they would just make a mess.
Right, and maybe get hurt on the boulders.
And you just have gravel everywhere. And
I know. But, when you're speaking about gravel, there are nowadays so many different types of, quote, gravel. There's some very nice colored rock, like blues and grays. I mean, soft gray, not like what you find on the road as gravel. But they're usually round and smooth. Blues, greens, tans, and white. And then you've got the cinder, red cinder rock. I mean, you can make a beautiful design with rock and a few really hardy plants scattered through an area with maybe three nice boulders kind of sunk into the landscape, and then surround it with what we usually do is we put a base rock of the least expensive Which would be like a half inch round rock or maybe an inch round rock. And that's your base, you know, that kind of covers everything. And then on top of that, that's when we install the more colorful, expensive rock. And like I say, there's the blues, the greens, the whites, and reds. And you can kind of scatter them around and make really a very interesting pattern. It's it brings out the highlights in, believe it or not, in the, just the gray old plain rock. The old plain gray rock is all of a sudden looks good because it has some, there's some color in there. You throw some red cinder rock. We've built areas that excuse me, that a person wanted a little bit of a pathway, so we built it right on top of the gray rock, and we just laid the red cinder and kind of wound it around through the yard with some curves, and what it does, it breaks up the look visually. It's it looks like there's really two different yards there, and then you build a few native rock raised planters and put some very hardy plants in there, and like dwarf spruce or pine, Nugo pine or something along those lines that don't need a lot of care, and voila, you got a landscape. It looks good. You got a low maintenance landscape because all of it, you don't have to mow the rock, wash the rock, or fertilize the rock. It's just there. It's rock, and it's good. But to do a very large yard that way, it really bumps up the temperature around your house. Like on a day like today, say it's 86 or 85 out there, if all of your yard is rock, it's probably going to be more towards 90 because the rock absorbs the heat and continues to absorb the heat and keeps it that way even after the sun goes down. The rock's hot, and so your yard's hot, so you're inside trying to, wondering why your air conditioning is not really doing its job. Well, it's because it's got to fight that hot air outside and convert it to cool air, and sometimes that's a bit of a tussle for those old machines. But grass, on the flip side of that, the grass actually cools the atmosphere. It's when the sun goes down, it doesn't retain its heat. There's a coolness to it, and of course it's an oxygen creator, and it's just so a little bit of both, a little bit of grass in the backyard or the front yard with some rock and some different plants, and voila, you got a nice landscape, and it's easy. It's the only, you know, if you do have lawn, you got the mowing, the edging, the fertilizing, you know, the bugs attack, you got to take care of the bugs, and you have to water it. And that's kind of where I'm leading today about I've heard and read that we're facing a drought situation, and they're calling for drought here and drought there and drought this and drought that. So you never know when you're going to have a summer downpour. I've seen those happen too. But if you're concerned about you know, how much your water bill is going to be, or running out of water if you live in a very rural spot like I do, you have to use your brain and say, okay, I want some new plants, but what are the kinds of plants that I can put in that it's not going to require a lot of water? And that's simple, and I'll tell you about that a little bit later. But if you, like I say, if you have a call, you know, 673-4464 is what'll get you in here. But you know, a lot of folks, like I said, have just, the nursery has really been busy, you know, for people coming in and wanting to spruce up their yard, and simply because there's more time to do it. They're not working maybe full time, and maybe they're not working at all for a brief time, and you say, well, gosh, what do I do, man? I wanted to plant some trees, or I wanted to plant a vegetable garden, or I wanted to build a retaining wall or something like that, and you know, make the yard a little bit better. Well, you can make your yard nicer than a park if you want. It just depends on how much money you want to spend and how much time you want to spend doing it, or hire it out to be done, or a little bit of both. I mean, you know, sometimes we do the rough work, kind of get everything prepared, and then the homeowner does the planting and picks out the plants they want, and the ground's already prepped, maybe the sprinkler system's in, or the retaining wall is up, and all they have to do is, it's like putting the icing on the cake. There's the cake, It looks good. You know that it's going to taste good, but when you put the icing on, bam, voila, you really got a cake. Well, same with the yard. You get the basics done, and then you decorate it with your favorite plants and put a lot of flowers in there. Put a lot of vegetables in with your a lot of flowers in with your veggies, and it's not only just a vegetable garden, but it's a garden at the same time. In the long run, this is going to add value, obviously, and beauty to your home. So if you're spending a lot of time there, I'd rather have a pretty yard than a ugly yard. And I've lived in a house where it was an ugly yard. It took me 2 years to make it pretty, but that's a whole nother story. So being on a home arrest by your government can be a positive experience. And when they really open things up, and they are, it's going to be better. And then people will get busy doing other things like going swimming and playing baseball and those kinds of things. But at any rate, look at your yard as a challenge. Look at your yard and say, how can I make it better? You know, look at the bright side of the equation and put a positive note to it, and do some reading, do some study, and do some looking around. Drive around, look at yards, go to nurseries, go to places where their plants are sold, and envision, how's that going to look in my front yard, or how's it going to look at my entryway by the front door? Should I put it in pots or put it in the ground? There's so many variations of what you can do with plants that will be very attractive. But also pay attention to the type of plant, and in this kind of a year, you might want to go toward the more drought-tolerant types, because you never know when they're going to say, oh, you can only water once a week and for 10 minutes or something like that, because, you know, I've seen it happen before. But that being what it is, this spring, you know, it's just an opportunity you can have, and even if you've got some things that take a lot of water, like hanging baskets and stuff like that, that's a lot of good color. It can be hung on the patio, it can be hung in a tree if it's shady enough, and it looks really good. Any flowering plant, you know, is fair game for sprucing up that yard. It just adds another dimension. It helps you, it relaxes you, gives you a sense of satisfaction and completion. And my wife and I, we own a nursery. We work in a nursery. I work in a landscaping. Yet when we go home, we putter in our yard for about an hour every night at least. Or if I'm mowing and she's got all these baskets. Gosh, she keeps bringing stuff home from the nursery. Why'd you bring, where am I going to put that? Where am I going to plant that? Well, I mean, the place is full, for crying out loud. Oh, well, I got a spot over here, and she'll wedge it in between, you know, all the other things.
Do we need counseling here or something?
I think we do. She needs counseling, definitely.
Okay, he said that. Take note. I'm just stay well, over here I was in the corner.
I was set up by the announcer here to say something
like
that.
Yeah, blame the media.
Well, I'm going to blame the media, of course, what everybody else does. So anyway, use your imagination and just put look and see what's available. That's the fun part. Going around and looking and seeing, you know, getting ideas. Yeah, there are good magazines, landscape magazines, that you can get with a lot of photos in there. And the photos are really good. They give you good ideas. But when you walk your neighborhood, you know, there's always somebody on the street, like down the street from where Kyle lives, that has a really pretty Japanese maple and a pretty this and a pretty that. And you go, geez, that is really nice. Well, Kyle's will be that way someday, too. It's okay. I pruned it.
I think it looks pretty good right now.
Oh, yeah, I know it does. It'll get better, too. Trust me. Really, trust me. I'm the plant doctor.
All right, here we go.
Okay.
Time for break.
Okay.
Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show, 673-4464. Back with the Commissioner of Dirt in 2 minutes on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Russell
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon 423, the afternoon report with Douglas County's news team at 5, followed by Dave Ramsey and Jim Bohannon. Keep your radio at 541radio.com, the 541 radio app, and check the KQEN Facebook page as well for all the information you need. This hour every week, though, devoted to Mike Winters, the commissioner of dirt.
Of dirt, yes. I won't say what I said before. With this virus thing.
By the way, speaking of during the break, apparently yeah. I'm now in trouble because I got rid of some dirt.
Yeah, you did. And you threw the soil into the landfill.
I called it used dirt.
Yeah, it had been recycled.
Well, it had been sitting in planters that we hadn't used for a couple of years, and I thought I'd get them cleaned up and we'll get fresh new soil to go in there if she decides to plant something in them.
Well, you could do that, but you could also have a little stockpile in one of the corners of your yard behind your little shed.
I don't like little.
And then you'd always have something, you know, useful to put in a new pot.
Now, see, I do that, I'd never get cleaned up, and then I get yelled at.
I know. And that's when you call me and say, Mike.
But it was nice to get it more cleaned up.
Yes. Well, that's what we did. I took my crew, a portion of my crew, out to my place, and our yard is considerably larger than yours because we're in the forest, and but the grasses were some of them were almost 3 feet tall on the perimeter around the yard, and we cut that down, we weeded it, and we sprayed, we did this, we did that, and. Two of my guys specifically did the majority of the work because I was doing other things. But the place looked so much better. And when my wife came home, I said, "Let me show you the yard." And we took a tour, and she goes, "Oh man, this is so good! Tell those guys, thank you."
Well, and you have about 4,000 acres?
Somewhere in there, yeah. 4,000 acres, gosh, 120. But
do you really 120?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Most of it's timber, though.
Okay.
Yeah, so I leave that kind of all natural. You know?
Right. So it's not all landscaped and bark mulched.
No. But about an acre of it is. And it's tough stuff. And I got a section here in my notes about tough stuff. And if you don't have any water, what do you plant? You know, if you run out of water, or we're low on water, or the South Umpqua goes dry, what do you do if there's no water available, or just enough to drink or take a shower, and not water your lawn or not water your shrubs? And I'll get into that too. But on the tail end of Mother's Day week, which was 2 weeks ago now or something like that, we were running out of stuff because of all the people that were coming in. You do your normal buying and planning and your greenhouse stuff so that you have enough for the spring. And the swarms of people that came in just bought up everything, and they're still coming, for crying out loud. And the bummer of it is, like during Mother's Day week, we couldn't get new cut flowers simply because there were no planes flying. And you say, well, why would you have a problem getting flowers in a plane? Well, because most of our cut flowers come from South America. Yeah, and they shut down their airline industry, so consequently there were no deliveries to the United States. So we had to depend on what we could get locally, which was very slim pickings because Southern California is a better climate place to grow the cut type of flowers that florists use, and Oregon is not. There are a few in Oregon, but not very many, so consequently everybody's wanting flowers on Mother's Day, and there just ain't none available. So we had to scramble. My wife actually went to Freddy's a couple of times and bought a bunch of flowers there because we were running out of flowers, and you know, you hate to do that. Usually we have way too many, but not this year. But and it's just happening to all the nurseries in the county. It just happens, and it's happening to the north of us. I can't imagine what the Portland area was like, or Salem, or Eugene, where scads of people are out there shopping for Mother's Day's items or landscape materials, and there's not enough to grow around right now. It's kind of interesting what's going to happen in the industry if they're going to gear up and grow more or just kind of keep it at the same. So hopefully we don't have any more pandemics, so it won't alter what we do in our society. At any rate, it's been a nice spring so far, and the we're just a little bit short of normal precipitation. That's kind of got me not worried, but concerned as to how are we going to keep things alive if for my well on a dry year is it recovers and it works, but it you can only put out so much before you have to stop and let it rest an hour so it can recoup X amount of gallons so you can turn it back on so you can water all the potted plants you have for sale up front. We've been short of normal precip by about 12 inches. We're about 12 inches below normal right now for this time of year. And my best advice for yards is just to water the newly planted items and be very cautious as to how you do it. In other words, don't turn on your sprinkler system and just let it run and forget it and go to Freddy's and get some hamburgers and come home and say, oh, I've left the sprinkler on, I gotta turn that off. That's definitely a waste of water. But water those shrubs and trees sparingly. And don't waste that water, because it's a precious commodity, more precious than gasoline or a lot of other things we think are precious. But adjust your time and your frequency if you have an automatic sprinkler. Just do that. What we don't need now is a state water shortage and having the government come down and tell us what we can and cannot do. But yet to this day, I continue to see wasteful midday watering going on. Saw some today, and I'm thinking, what in the heck are they watering now? Why didn't they water when it was dark? Why didn't they water when it was, just daylight or after sunset or something like that? It's because when you do that, it takes less water to get the same result. If you water, and I've said this 1,000 times or 100 times minimum, is that when you water in the middle of the day on a hot day, 50% of that water is being evaporated. It's not even hitting the ground. It's not hitting the lawn. It's not hitting the shrubs. It's just getting sucked up into the atmosphere and disappearing. And so be wise in your watering ways. Water at night, water early in the morning, and time it. Time it so that, watch it, you turn on zone one and you say, okay, zone one normally takes, 25 minutes. Well, go out there after about 15 minutes and see how much the water has actually penetrated. Is there any of it running off down the sidewalk or down the driveway or something like that? Well, that indicates that you might be watering too much, or it indicates that there's a sprinkler that's out of adjustment, and so therefore water going down the driveway is not beneficial to you or your yard, and you're going to pay for it whether you get results from it or not. You're still paying the freight. So be observant. Don't just trust the clock to come on and go off at a set time, because those clocks, a lot of them are computerized. Most of them are computerized nowadays, but still the computers mess up. Maybe that's no news to a lot of people, but they do mess up. And you programmed it for 15 or 20 minutes and you go out there in 15 or 20 minutes and the thing is still running. You think, well, it should be off. And then you let it go and it just keeps running because something malfunctioned with the brain inside the box. So pay attention to that. It's to your advantage. Early morning watering once or twice a week will keep things alive. You don't have to water everything every day. Plant roots will actually grow deeper following the soil moisture as it drops in the ground. The roots will follow it. It wants the water. It wants the moisture to survive, so it's going to send roots after it. And if you're just doing surface watering, well, the roots cannot develop so that they go deep, because plants can be lazy, and if the living is easy, they stay at the surface. They don't have to work for whatever they got, food or water. So 5 minutes a day or 10 minutes a day does your plants no good, none whatsoever. I mean, all it does is kind of wet the bark and cool the leaves. That's about it. And like I said, the hot days, 50% of the water is evaporating. And so let's say you water at 6 a.m. and or 5 a.m. And water it good, like on a lawn, maybe once or twice a week. That's all you need to keep it alive and green. It will survive. I do not water my lawn at home and it's still green. The only thing that waters it is what drops out of the sky. Usually by July, 4th of July, it's pretty brown. But you know what? I don't have to mow it very much from July till September. Then you get a first good rainstorm running in there for about 3 or 4 days, and things green right up, and you're back into the mowing mode. So they don't die. They don't go away. They don't blow away. They don't disintegrate. They're there. The roots are there. They kind of go dormant, and they just wait it out. And so... if you are this everyday water type of person, stop it. Conserve. Make sure that you do more time and less days. It's better to do a half an hour twice a week than 5 minutes every day.
I think right now at our extra house, it is set for 3 times a week at 17 minutes a zone.
Good. And is that for the grass or the shrubs or?
Well, everything. It
because everything the sprinkler system gets everything.
I think so.
Yeah.
So we just, I had it, had it actually off, but with the warmer weather coming up, we need to probably get this in and, keep it looking nice.
Yeah, you don't want to create a deficit of water. Just because it's still green, you dig down and say, is there any moisture in there? If there's no moisture, crank on your sprinkler system and get it back up to snuff. And it's easier to keep the water level and the dampness in the soil simply by paying attention to the weather and the time of day that you water and the amount of time. 17 minutes is not bad. If it got hotter, you might want to crank it up to 25 minutes, but do it one less day a week. And that's good. It evens that out really well.
The house that we live in, I've been, kind of monitoring it and just sort of turning it on when it looks like maybe I should.
Yeah.
And what I really like is when I finished mowing the other night and it cleaned up a bunch of things and got to the landfill and all of that, turned it on about probably 7 at night, a little early, but I like to listen to it.
Yeah.
Then I like the way the yard looks right after.
Everything's glistening.
Yeah, it just looked really neat. Yep. And it was just sort of, it was like, just sort of having a, not quite an ocean, but just a little water feature kind of situation.
Yeah, so. And that's fine. I mean, but, if you turn it on for 5 minutes and just want to enjoy the sprinkler running, that doesn't constitute a watering. It's when you put the time on it, that's, a real watering.
And I think that house, I think it's at 10 minutes a zone. So you're saying that I should probably put it at more.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I think you should.
All right.
Now, how many days a week is it on?
Well, I just, whenever I decide to do it.
Oh, so it's not on.
I don't, I haven't dialed it in. I just make it, the last time it had gotten left on, my wife reminded me that she didn't like it coming on at its normal time of 3 a.m. because that's about when I'm leaving, and she's just sort of falling back to sleep from the noise I make, and then the sprinkler comes on.
The sprinkler doesn't make noise. It's a soothing water feature.
Apparently.
Explain that to her.
You explain it to her. Good luck with that.
No way, Jose.
4:36. Oh, boy. Mike Winters, Lawn and Garden Show, News Radio 1240, KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240, KQEN.
Good afternoon. Hi there. Thanks for listening on your way home. The afternoon report coming up at 5 with Douglas County's news team. And let's just see how warm it has gotten this afternoon.
89.
No, it did not get that warm. 88? It was only supposed to be 81.
I know. I listen to you guys every day. I've learned how to add and subtract to what you predict.
Well, and now I see the new forecast. They've ramped it up. Now they're saying 90 tomorrow and 90 on Friday.
Good.
So, wow, warmer than expected. See, I haven't gotten to go outside all day other than I stand in the parking lot for 30 seconds. And
that's enough.
Yeah, then they pulled me back into work. So, yeah. But wow, nice afternoon. Warm out there, so be careful on your way home. And if you get a phone call to make to Mike Winters, 673-4464, this would be a great time to do it.
Yeah, yeah. I ran out of things to say. No, I didn't. Well, you know, in this heat, as we were talking, do not waste the water. That's just my bottom line today. I just don't. You got to do it smart. You got to be smart. And you know, I don't like outside interests such as the government, state, federal, whatever, telling me when I can do my watering or how much I can water or what kind of plants I can have. And you know, we can surpass all that if we do things correctly, and as long as we all share a little bit, we're good to go. You know, I raised five kids on spring water that I developed a spring, and it was at $1,200 gallon tank that I built out of cedar and redwood, and it came down off the mountain. And in the summertime, there were a few, like I think in 1977, we had a very, very dry winter, kind of like we've just experienced, and there was no rain in sight, and all the water was way down. And my kids learned how to take showers in 5 minutes. And or less, and our plants around the house survived with little or no water, and 99% of them are still living today, and their roots go very deep. I mean, it's just how you do it and how you approach it and think about it. And and one thing in your plant beds, in your whole landscape, pull all those weeds. Get the weeds out, or spray them, do something, get rid of them in their flower beds. There's nothing to gain by watering your weeds, so the less of that garbage you have growing up.
Hi there, you're on the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show.
Oh, you interrupted me there.
I did. What's your question for Mike?
Hello.
And they went away.
They go away? I'm sorry.
Wow.
Call back. I want to talk to you. I want to answer your question, because it really helps to have people call in, because there's a lot of people that have the same question, but they're afraid to call, or they're driving a car and they don't know the number, or, you know, for a variety of reasons. So when it's like when you're in school, you know, finally one kid asks the teacher a question and the teacher answers it, and it was only one kid that raised their hand, but 14 other kids wanted to have that same answer. So it's the same thing, you know, we're okay. So pull your weeds, get it clean, and then after you've weeded, like a heavy mulch is going to keep the weeds in check, and it's going to be beneficial in the long term in keeping the moisture level where you want it for all your shrubs and trees. And mulch can be old bark, old sawdust, or last fall's leaves. You got a pile of leaves in the corner from the shade trees or whatever. Hey, spread them around the base of your plants. That will conserve water and keep the ground cool. It's an insulator. It's something that helps long term, and it also helps supply nutrition for quite a number of years and improves your soil. And every bit of it feeds your plants. So be smart, reduce over the water, and have plenty of mulch on, and you're going to be good to go. So a lot of folks say, well, that's a good idea. Thank you for all those ideas and everything else. But what kind of plants do I plant that are, you know, survivable in this kind of heat or dryness that we're going to experience? Well, I got a short list. There's many, many more than what I'll share with you. But, you know, in the drought-hardy ones, basically you have to take care of them a little bit in the first year. The first summer is critical. But after the first summer, you can really cut back on your watering. But like if you want trees, any kind of conifer, and that's like a fir tree, a pine, a cedar, a cypress, a spruce, arborvita, those are the kinds of trees that once they're established, they never really have to be watered again. unless you live on solid rock or something that, and there's no soil in there, you might have to water them a little bit more. But when you look around in Douglas County, you see all the natural trees on the Douglas fir on the hillsides. Some of them have died over the last 3 to 5 years because we've had reduced precipitation each year. And consequently, the soil moisture level never recoups to what it once was. So those trees, some of them, if they're planted way too close together, and in a lot of cases they are on timberland, they're all striving and fighting for that moisture. Well, some of them are not going to be strong enough to win, so they're going to die. The ones that live, the roots are more settled, there's more moisture for them, so they do a good job. But in your yard, let's say you want a nice fir tree, a Douglas fir tree, or a pine. There's so many different pines that you could plant. You know, ponderosa is, you know, grows wild around here, so does Doug fir. But in a yard situation, they're going to get more care, and they're going to do a whole lot better and grow a whole lot faster because the soil is better, the moisture level is better, everything. I mean, they got the perfect set of conditions. But a lot of, and cedars, there's, you know, you've got our what we call cedar, like incense cedar, Port Orford cedar, Western red cedar, but then you've got the exotic true cedars, like the cedar of Lebanon, blue atlas cedar, those kind that are very attractive in the landscape. And you might say, well, a pine tree is not very attractive. Yeah, it is. After a while, you get used to it, and it sets the tone for your yard, and you kind of bounce off that to landscape the other. Then there's the cypresses. Leyland cypress, which is very fast growing, good screen tree, good blocking tree, real deep green, grows at least 3 feet a year, and does a nice job. You don't want to have too many of those in a small yard, but it's good if you want a good screen from a highway or a neighbor or a bunch of buildings or something like that. It does an excellent job on stuff like that. Then there are dwarf varieties of conifers. There's dwarf spruces, dwarf cedars, dwarf atlas cedars, those kinds of things. So you don't want anything really tall, but you want something that's different. You want something that's colorful and easy to maintain and not a slave to water and fertilizer, and yet looks good at the same time. Now, shade trees and trees with leaves, believe it or not, Japanese maples are very tough. And there's so many varieties to choose from. It doesn't get to be, some of them get to be a big tree. I've got a couple that are, oh gosh, 35, 40 feet, but they're a different kind of tree. There's 3,000 varieties of Japanese maples that have actual names, and there's probably a lot more that people haven't quite discovered yet.
So which number or name is mine?
I can't remember. But then you have your shade maples, and Japanese maples are decorative, and they'll give you a little bit of shade, but they're not considered, quote, a shade tree because the leaves are smaller, they're thinner, if you will. If you look at a regular shade maple, like Autumn Fantasy or a Big Leaf Maple or a Red Sunset Maple, the leaves are bigger, they're thicker, they do provide shade. And if you got a yard that you need some shade, you want it cooler, hey, put one of those in. But you're only going to have to water it that first year, really. It's good to go. It will really, really work. And if you overwater it, you're going to do more harm more harm than good. Then you got oaks. There's lots of oaks. You know, we got white oak and black oak growing all over our hills. I mean, they're about as tough as you can possibly get. They'll grow out of concrete, for crying out loud, out of rocks, and a lot of them do. But you've got pin oaks, red oaks, English oaks, columnar oaks that you can find at different nurseries, and they're beautiful fall colors, and they do a real fine job on unshading too. Oh, we're gonna take a break.
We do. Final segment coming up, Mike Witter's Lion Garden Show, the Commissioner of Dirt, 673-4464. It's 450 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Final segment. You don't get to hear from him until next week unless you see him standing around on the street somewhere with his live podcast, which essentially is him. Well, it's talking to himself, so it might be another issue. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I talk to myself a lot. It's good stuff. Don't worry. I was talking about in the last segment different types of shade trees and things like that you could use and to cool your yard. And these are guys that don't need a lot of care. They don't need a lot of water. And believe it or not, fruit trees are in that category. My mini orchard at the nursery that I've been growing for maybe 5 years never gets watered except what comes out of the sky, and they're beautiful trees. They're full of fruit, and they do really well. And I just don't water them. I don't water my grapes either. And they got lots of grapes. So fruit trees are a good thing, and they're a small shade tree if you let them be. But you don't want to let them get real tall, and then they get non-productive, and they're not fulfilling their life's role, if you will. And the last one I have on my shade tree list is a sweet gum. Sweet gums are kind of, they look like a maple. They're not round. They're more pyramidal in shape. How's that? But they grow to a fairly good size. They're not as fast as a maple, but in the scheme of things, they're probably some of the most colorful. And the interesting thing is they're kind of the last leaf tree to actually push leaves in the spring. You know, the maples are out and this is out, and then finally the sweet gums start to leaf out. They're a couple of weeks behind. And then on the flip side of that, in the fall, when they start to color up, the beautiful orange, red, burgundy leaves, and what happens is that the leaves hang on till about December before they finally fall off. I've seen them in January with leaves with leaves on them. So that's not, some people wouldn't consider them a shade tree, but they do provide shade. So and these are all, like I say, tough stuff that you can plant and not worry about and not be a slave to water. As far as shrubs are concerned, native shrubs are great. Oregon grape is great. Kinnikinick is a good ground cover. Juniper. And when I mention juniper to some of my clients, I go, oh, no, they're ugly. Well, there's about 50 or 60 different types of juniper that are available. And if you grow them right and put them in the right location and don't crowd them up, they're a great ground cover. And you can prune them into any shape you want and keep them very, very beautiful. Most folks, when they buy them, they're small. And 1 gallon can, and so they put them too close together, and then 5 years later they got this jungle that's half of it is dying out because it's crowded. Well, if you space them out and let them grow, they do a real good job, and they're super, super hardy. You don't have to do anything to them except admire them. And I said Kinnikinick, that's a native ground cover that grows wild in our mountains. Cotone aster is another ground cover with the blooms. It's evergreen, and it's not a water lover. And if you want some color, try an ice plant. I've got an ice plant. I have two varieties of ice plant. This, and both of them are winter hardy. Both of them come back every spring. Both of them grow very quickly and bloom all summer long and don't require hardly any water at all. And then there's the dwarf Mugo pines. They're a dime a dozen around here, but they're a very tough plant. And there's dwarf spruces and dwarf pine, other pines that'll fit the bill. But if you want a hedge, try Photinia, which some people call firebush, or they say, hey, you got that red leaf thing that makes a hedge? Yeah, it's called Photinia.
And hold that thought. I think we have a question.
All right.
What do you want to ask Mike Winters? Well, they went away again.
What's going on here?
I don't know.
Huh? Are these, what do you call those kind of calls? Nobody.
Be like a robocall.
Maybe I didn't hear it ring either. Okay, but I'm talking about tough shrubs that you're not going to have to worry about watering. And Photinia, the firebush, is one of them. And then the ornamental grasses. We used to have pampas grass, and that was about the only ornamental grass we had around here. But in the last 20 years, there are more and more ornamental grasses that are very showy, different colors, different growth habits. And once they're planted, once their root system is secure, Again, those are the types of things that you can ignore and they'll grow not because of you, but in spite of you. And they're blues and browns and greens and just yellows. There's a lot of colors, a lot of, some of them have thick leaves, some of them have real thin leaves when they're planted in group settings and group plantings at an entryway or on a mound or something like that. They're really, really pretty and they're very interesting. And they're basically, bugs don't bite them, deer don't eat them, porcupines don't make nests in them. They're tough and they're good. You like them. One of my favorites, of course, is Nandina. It's some people call it heavenly bamboo, but the proper name is Nandina. And good tough shrub, takes heat, takes drought. Deer don't seem to bother it much. They might take a few bites. And we've got the Moyer's Red Nandina that we grow at the nursery. We've got Dwarf Nandina, and it's probably only gets about 2.5 to 3 feet tall. Very, very colorful. Very, very nice. And little stuff like succulents are really good. You plant them in bunches, and they make a really nice display. They kind of look like desert plants most of the time, but they work here. They can take the snow and the rain and the heat, and they spread on their own. It's amazing how they spread. They're just kind of a very, very prolific type of little plant. You look at it by itself and say, that doesn't look very tough, but they are. So thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you learned something.
And where do people find you?
And Highway 99, south of Winston, about a half a mile, and we're on the left-hand side. Big green roofs and beautiful plants all over, and you'll see lots of cars in the parking lot.
And what's the phone number out there?
The phone number is 679-8224.
Back next week with the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN. News time, 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock.